Welcome everybody to this retreat, Easter Retreat 2006. Just looking around that most of you I know very well. Just the usual suspects come into the the Easter Retreat. Which means it makes it easier because that you know exactly what goes on here, you know how I teach, you know the schedules, you know just how things are run here. So it makes it very easy that most of you are very familiar with this type of retreat. But for those of you who aren't familiar with this retreat, you'll soon discover it is slightly different than other meditation retreats which you may have been on. One of the first things you will notice is that these schedules are almost non-existent. There is no bell in the morning, there's no bell in the evening. We try and have as few bells as possible. And the reason for this is that we expect everyone who's come here to try their very best to develop their meditation. And you don't really need to be forced to get up early in the morning or to stay up late at night. Here, I've always found, or rather in the last few years, I've found that the best way to develop meditation is actually to give everybody the freedom to meditate however long they need. If there was a bell early in the morning, then people would feel they have to go to bed early so they can get enough rest before they have to get up. Which means that sometimes you're meditating well, you're getting peaceful, things are going fine, and you feel you have to break that in order to go to bed and get up early in the morning. So when there's no bell in the morning, it means that you feel free to stay up late. 9, 10, 11, 12, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, who cares? Which means you can always go back to your room and sleep in the morning if that's what you need. By that way that you're working with the natural rhythms of your body and mind rather than trying to enforce some artificial schedule. And this is certainly something which I've known in my monastic life, that sometimes in monasteries you'd be meditating after the evening meeting and getting very peaceful and still. You wanted to continue. But you think, my goodness, if I continue any longer, I've got to get up at 3 o'clock. And you had to get up at 3 o'clock in those monasteries. So I'm not going to get any sleep. I'm going to be tired in the morning. And so I broke my meditation to try and keep these stupid schedules. And when I stopped those schedules, it wasn't that I thought, wow, it's great, I can go to bed early and get up late. That especially for people coming on this retreat, you've already given up so much to come here. Some of you have travelled for long distances to come here. So your motivation has already been well demonstrated by the fact you're here. So you don't need to force people. Just encourage people to go according to their natural tendencies, their forces of meditation. So, for the rest of these 9 days, you can go to bed whenever you want. You can get up whenever you want. So this means that there is no sort of hard and fast schedule. And I won't be looking to see who's here for the morning chanting or who's here. That doesn't matter. So you know, if you're staying up late because your meditation's going well, fine, then go to bed, and when you wake up, when you feel that it's a time to get up and just come and carry on meditating here. It's almost as if you're not going to look at the clock, you're not going to be a prisoner of time for the next 9 days. And this is what sometimes happens, you're meditating. If you get very peaceful, by nature, sometimes you don't need so much sleep. You go to bed and you're meditating very well, 9, 10, 11 o'clock, and you go to bed at maybe 11:30, you wake up at 1, and you feel bright. Don't think, I've only had 1.5 hours sleep, I better go and get some more beauty sleep. You don't have to worry about beauty, you're all old anyway here, so it's a waste of time worrying about being beautiful. So don't worry about the beauty sleep. If it's 1.5 hours, it's all you sleep, just get up and come out here to meditate some more. If you sort of got it wrong and you know after an hour you're really sleepy, then go back to bed again. So go according to your nature rather than something which is imposed upon you artificially from outside. And that way, when your meditation is hot, you can go with it and flow with it. You don't have to be worried about these schedules. And even if you do stay up late from 1, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, don't worry. You will get up by breakfast. There's something about breakfast that you don't need a bell for. Everybody will know, or rather your stomach will tell you when the breakfast is ready. And if you do miss the breakfast, wow, then that means you really can sleep. So you don't really need all these bells here. And it's the same with what happens during the day. Then we do have, you know, time for breakfast, we do have a time for lunch, but that's the only real schedules. There are some interview times, and there'll be some morning talks and the evening questions and answers. For those talks and the evening questions and answers, I've always found it more useful to give the main talk of the day in the morning, to set the theme for the day, to inspire people just after breakfast about what we're going to be doing that day. And in the evening, we use it for, leave it for questions and answers. And instead of actually putting your hand up to ask those questions and answers, we have the pieces of paper out there with the ice cream basket. And you just write down your questions and put them in that basket. And try and keep it like on like Buddhism or meditation. Don't ask Ajahn Brahm's opinion on the war in Iraq or things like that, because this is not a political retreat. This is all about Buddhism and meditation. So keep it on the subject, so that it becomes an informative opportunity, an opportunity to train and also to learn more about Buddhism and about the meditation. But the meditation is the main aim of this retreat. And the scheduling of basically no schedule will actually mean that sometimes that you'll be able to sit for long periods of time. And those of you sort of who have got the courage to do so, you can take off your watches and just put them in your bags and forget about them. So you don't actually time yourself when you're meditating. You don't think, oh, I can only sit for 40 minutes or an hour or whatever. Just forget about that. Just close your eyes and sit, make your mind peaceful. See how long it goes. And once the mind decides it's had enough of meditation, then open your eyes and come out again. Don't even count the minutes or count the hours. And that way we keep even our meditation period natural. Again, that some meditation retreats, they ding the gong every 1 hour. And that's a terrible thing to do, because I've done that myself. And sometimes you're getting some really nice meditation, and this idiot at the top there bangs the gong, and just about to get enlightened, and there you've blown it. What bad karma that must be for the person who rang the gong. And other times you can't wait for the gong to ring. You know, you're aching, you're bored, you're fed up, and you just can't wait. And that sort of just creates more problems in the meditation. It's much easier to, I'm going to take this away now. Maybe I'll ring it when we do the in the morning chanting. But other than that, I'll hardly touch that thing, that bell. Because the point is that we want to try and get rid of the perceptions of time. So you come into a timeless retreat. In the forest monasteries of Thailand, where I grew up, in most of those monasteries there weren't morning meetings or evening meetings. It was only Ajahn Chah started these, and he started them basically because many of the monks were getting too lazy. But you know, to be quite honest with you, it's mostly the Thai monks were the lazy ones. The Westerners, the very fact they'd managed to get all that way to Thailand and become monks meant they were highly motivated. We were always out of the 3 o'clock meeting, always staying up all night on the once a week. Our motivation was so strong. We didn't really need those meetings. And as soon as, you know, those meetings were stopped, or they were stopped quite regularly, or you went to these small monasteries, still, we would always keep getting up early. I remember I was so well trained that when I first went to England in the first year of the Chithurst Monastery, I went to stay there, and that was freezing. For any of the people who think it's cold here, that was minus 26 degrees, and they hadn't had the heating in yet. That's centigrade. So very cold. But even so, they were getting up at 4 o'clock. But I was so trained for about 7 years, I've been getting up at 3 o'clock. It didn't matter, 3 o'clock, I was out there, had to get up and just was sitting meditation, waiting for everyone else to come in. just the motivation, which was so strong, even though it was cold, even though I didn't need to get up, I just did because I felt like it. Now this is actually the sort of attitude we want to try and encourage in this retreat. That, you know, you're going with the inclination of the mind rather than going through the exercise of willpower from either myself or from yourself, and not going through guilt. If you feel tired, as many of you will do in the first couple of days, sleep a lot. Don't worry about spending a lot of time in your room on the first few days. Many of you have come from a great distance. Some of you have been working hard. You have what in medicine we call sleep deficit. It's only 1 or 2 days is all you really need to overcome that. But if you try and meditate with sleep deficit, just working on willpower, when your body and your mind aren't really ready for it, you're just going to make yourself more tense. You're going to screw up your mind, and that's never the way you're going to get into deep meditation. So be kind to your body in the first couple of days. If you feel tired, go and take a rest. Sleep naturally, even without an alarm. You know, once the body has had enough, it will wake up. You can go and get yourself a cup of tea or coffee or water, go to the toilet, you know, brush your teeth, whatever you do, and then just come and do some meditation. And don't really worry about what time it is. And that way, you will be going according to the nature of the mind. You will find the first few days you will sleep more. And as you get into the meditation, you'll find the mind will start to brighten up. You need less sleep. It just becomes a natural process. And I've been doing this method for a long time now, and it works wonderfully well. You don't expect very much in the first few days of the retreat, but by relaxing, resting, taking away that which blocks deep meditation, which is your willpower and controlling and your fear, you find that in the later part of the retreat, the meditation flows so smoothly, naturally, and you sit much longer than you ever expected, and far deeper, simply because you've worked with the mind rather than against it. When you understand this way of meditation, you understand why a lot of people never get into deep meditation, because they are just too much control freaks. And having routines and schedules is just encouraging more control freak stuff. The idea of meditation is to let go. And many of you have seen this demonstration before, but I'm going to ask you to open your eyes and look at this. So those of you who are not asleep, please open your eyes. Some of you already are asleep. Which is why I say it's good actually go and have a vessel in a few moments. A glass of water, look, just hold this up. When you try and hold a bottle of water absolutely still, you can watch me trying to hold this still. I've been doing this demonstration a lot for the last 6 months. Even though I've been practicing holding things still, I just cannot keep this bottle of water still. Those in the front row can see it is still vibrating, it is still shaking. I try harder. I can't do it. You know why? Because it's the nature of the muscles in an arm always to be moving. The muscles can't hold anything still. It is an impossibility. And if I try to keep this bottle of water still, I'll just be getting frustrated and never achieving anything. Does that ring any bells for you? Trying to keep your mind still, always getting frustrated, wondering how can we do this? You keep trying, maybe many years, and you've never been able to hold your mind still. Holding your mind still is what meditation is all about. But there's a very easy way of keeping this bottle of water absolutely still. You just put it down. You detach. Stop grasping, let it go, leave it alone, disengage, allow it to be. It can do whatever it wants, unconditional mindfulness, care, kindness. Now look at that bottle of water, it's absolutely still now. Yep. And it's so easy to do. You just need to let it go and put it down. Now that's a perfect metaphor for the way of meditation. If you control and hold and try and make your mind still, it will never become still. You get tired, there'll always be some movement, some restlessness, because restlessness comes from grasping, from holding, from controlling. That's the cause of the restlessness of the mind. The way of meditation is stopping the controlling, stopping the craving, letting go. The door of my heart's open to this moment, no matter what it is. Unconditional mindfulness. This is good enough. All of those words pointing to a disengaging of your controller from what you're experiencing. And this is what you'll find happens when you have the courage to stop controlling, to leave things alone, to disengage, just allow things to be, just to watch, to be the silent observer. You'll find that things become still all by themselves, because at last you are not disturbing the world. Sajjan Shah famously said, it's not sounds disturb you, you disturb the sounds. It's not the world is disturbing, or your mind or your body is disturbing. It's you disturb the meditation. You're the one who creates the restlessness. You're the one who creates the seeds of frustration. So all you need to do is stop the grasping and put the mind, this moment, whatever you're experiencing, whatever's happening, down. Leave it alone. Because that is the essence of meditation, the ability to let go, to disengage, and to see the whole world become still, and as things become still, the world disappears. This is the nature of the senses which are in our body. Our senses can only know movement, change. If you have a sound in the background which never changes, the hum of the traffic or an air conditioner or whatever it is, if that sound is constant, it does not change. In other words, it is still. It disappears. If you keep your body still, you don't move it, you find a comfortable position and you leave it alone, after a while, your body disappears. You just can't feel it any longer. When you close your eyes, you may notice you see blackness. But when you see that blackness, it does not change or alter. After a while, even the blackness disappears. In the Zen tradition, that sometimes people sit facing a wall with their eyes open. After a while, the wall disappears. It's nothing amazing or psychic. It is just the fact that because the senses, the brain, is only wired to notice change, if nothing is changing or moving, it just disappears. And this is what we're doing with our meditation. We're keeping things still, so things disappear. They stop, they cease, they fade away. They nibbana. Once you understand what this is all about, you understand that your job to get these beautiful states of peacefulness and stillness when the whole world starts to disappear, and as they disappear, it reveals different layers of reality underlying this superficial reality you call your life. Superficial stuff disappears to reveal what's hidden underneath. When you keep still with that, that disappears to see a deeper level. It's a path of stillness. It's how you create that deepening of your insight, going further and further in. The more you move, the more you're on the surface. The stiller you are, the deeper you go in. That's why the Buddha said again and again and again, samadhi pataya yata bhutayana dasana. It is from that stillness, that attentive stillness, that you see things as they truly are. You go inside. So your job is to try and develop as much stillness as possible. And the only way you develop stillness is to leave things alone. Not to grasp or hold them, not to make them still, but to let them be still. That takes a lot of patience, a lot of courage, even a lot of faith, because it goes against your ego. Your ego sense of self is always wanting to make things happen, to be the agent of your success, that for your whole life that you are the one who made it to come here, who did this, achieved that. And you think that everything in your life is done because of me, the I, the ego, the self. To be able to let go, you have to weaken that sense of self. Leave it alone. You'll find that this is one of the biggest obstacles in your meditation. To really leave things alone, to disengage, is almost an act of spiritual suicide. When you don't do anything, it's as if you disappear. The less you get involved, the less you exist. The path of stillness is also a path to transcend the ego, what we take to be me, the doer, the controller, the will, the sense of self. This is why letting go is very difficult. It's because you're afraid that what you're really letting go of is yourself. And that fear is well grounded. It's a wonderful thing to let go of this ego, this sense of self. The more you let go, the less you control, the less you exist, the more still life becomes. And you get incredible peaceful, blissful states simply because you've got out of the way and let them happen. So in this whole meditation retreat, I'll be giving talk after talk after talk. The same idea looked at from the left and the right, from front, behind, above, below, pointing out this wonderful way of leaving things alone, letting them go, so that you can allow your whole mind and body, like this bottle of water, to become so still, effortlessly still. Once you understand that, you understand why I don't have any routines, why we don't have times when you have to sit or times when you get up. That's just encouraging more control. That's why even though we do have rules for this retreat, like no talking and not eating in the evening, these little things, this is just to simplify things, not to control, but just so you do less. So this is not, as it were, some rules or laws which are imposed from outside. It's just a way of encouraging more stillness, more calm, more peace. One of the biggest problems when so many people come into one place together is that our nature is to socialize and to talk. Fortunately, most of you have been on these retreats before, and you know we keep this noble silence. You don't need to talk at all. You don't need to even pass notes or to do any body language of a smile or a nod or whatever. And if you worry, sometimes people actually have written and complained to me and say, why is it on these retreats no one ever smiles at me? And said, don't worry about what other people are doing. You can smile at them, but don't worry what they're doing about you. They can frown, they can sort of put one finger up at you, who cares? That's their business. Your job is to look after yourself in this retreat, to keep peace, not to react, not to control. If that's what people want to do, fine. So if anyone talks during this retreat and you hear them, don't allow you to talk. Just keep your mind still. Make peace with whatever happens. It's their business, not yours. Your job is to try and keep quiet. If you can restrain the speech coming out of your mouth, you'll find after a while it's very easy to restrain the speech in your head. After a while, because you're not talking to each other, it gets very calm inside. At first, for those of you who have never been on such a retreat before, it feels strange that you're with other people and you can't talk to them. But don't worry, after a couple of days, you'll feel so at ease, so happy that you don't need to talk. Once you get over the habit, and it only takes one or two days to get over the habit of always having to talk to each other, after one or two days, you'll feel this wonderful freedom of not having to converse. So, please, no talking during this retreat. Not just in the hall, but you know, over there in your rooms or wherever, on the dinner table. Keep quiet. And if a person forgets, as they probably will do in the first couple of days, and they talk to you, don't talk back at them. Don't tell them off, because that means there's two persons talking when there was just one before. If someone talks, you see them talking, just take out one finger, give them the one finger sign, which means, shh, this is that one finger sign, not the other one. Shh. You can say, shh. So put one finger up in your mouth, shh. If they keep on talking, then you can leave a little note for me. We've got some masking tape or gaffer tape, and then I'll go and get them and I'll sort of wolves run. We'll keep them really quiet. So try and keep it quiet so there's no talking throughout the whole retreat. It's tough for the first couple of days, but afterwards it's just so nice. So not in other people's room and not even whispering. You don't need to whisper. Psst, psst, psst. Because you don't need to communicate with other people. Just leave it all alone. And also that those of you with your mobile phones, don't think, I can't talk with anyone else, I need to talk to someone. Don't go and ring up somebody in Singapore or whatever. I need to talk, please. So turn off your mobile phones. There's one exception there, because you have to keep it on tonight, because someone is coming late this evening on the aircraft. But after that, turn it off. Don't worry about your finances, whether the stock market's going up, going down, or going parallel. Don't worry about your family, whether your husband's run away, whether your wife is just having a great big party with her friends. Don't worry about that. Just throw the whole thing away. Because when you throw away your telephone, you just turn it off. You're also turning off your connection with the world. So you're free. Don't worry about anything. That means no one will be able to contact you. You'll be like a monk or a nun. You've left the world for 9 days. What a wonderful thing that is. So please, turn off all your mobile phones and don't turn them on again until the retreat is finished. If you really, really think there's something important, you have to give someone a call. Come to me and ask permission first of all. I'm always very kind. If it's that important you'll come and bother me with asking permission, then I'll probably say yes. Other than that, turn them off. And when you come in this, be kind to your body. It's not just allowing yourself to sleep for the first few days. In these retreats you'll see there are many chairs, and actually not so many here yet. But later on, I'm sure there'll be some more up here. I think there's some more around the back over here. It's important that you don't harm your body. If you sit for too long, you get aches and pains. The aches and pains mean you become negative, you're not enjoying the meditation, and without that enjoyment, you find you'll never get peace. Sit for just the right amount of time. If the floor is a bit too hard, there are stools, there's cushions, or there are chairs. And you don't always need to meditate here in this hall. This is only one place you can meditate. You've also got your rooms, your little caves. You can even try meditating in there. And you can get as many cushions or blankets, whatever you want to meditate. Well, you can go outside into the garden. You've all seen the garden, I hope, by now. This is one of the great advantages of this meditation center. We've got this huge garden outside. You can go and sit under a tree. So there's many places where you can sit meditation. So you don't always have to sit in here. Find a nice little nook cranny somewhere. Try there. That way you can get a bit of seclusion. You can get a bit of comfort. You don't always have to look upon this place as a place where your body always gets hurt. When I was at a retreat in Sydney, the person taking me to this retreat, who had been on many, many Vipassana retreats, told me, just let it slip. He used to think of the retreat center, the main hall, the meditation hall. He gave it a nickname. He called it the torture room. And every time he went in there, it's like, you know, stealing himself for more torture. Imagine. Now that's sometimes what it's like. You got 9 days of sitting on this cushion with a sore back and bad knees. And this is only just started. You may already have a sore back and sore knees. You've got 8 days to go. Don't get into things like that. This is not a torture center. This is not Abu Ghraib in Perth. So keep it gentle, keep it kind. When the Buddha was supposed to call himself the compassionate one, it wasn't just some spin, you know, from his great monks to try and make him out to be a kind monk, but really, you know, when all the lay people were gone, he was just this really tough sort of Spartan sort of tyrant. The Buddha was compassionate in public and in private, and he taught compassion because it was a path to peace. So be kind to your body. Don't hurt it during this retreat. If you get tired and sore, sit on a chair. If you get really tired, have a rest. Walk meditation a lot. Just work with your body rather than against it. People get sore, they get aches and pains, again, because they try and force this body and push through it. Control freak business again. This was giving a simile to many of the monks in my monastery recently. But sometimes meditation is like finding your way through one of these mazes. And sometimes you think you're going in the correct direction because it looks like you're getting closer and closer to the center. And then you find you come across this blockage, this dead end. You can't go any further. And you have to go all the way back again and start from the beginning. You went down the wrong road. It came close, but it was the wrong road. That's what willpower does. You can get so far with willpower. Sometimes people think they are getting close to the goal. Through willpower, you can hold your breath for half an hour, for an hour, but you can't let it go and enter nimittas. You've been controlling too much. You get so far, but you can't go further. If you do the way of letting go, sometimes it looks as if you're going in the opposite direction, further and further away from the goal. But please have that faith and trust. That is the path which does lead to the goal. It may look a circuitous route for you, going in the wrong direction, but that winds back and goes right to the heart of the goal. Way of letting go. So don't think to yourself that controlling is working. If you force the mind, it just gets tense. When it gets tense, the body starts to ache, and the whole meditation falls apart. Do a way of letting go. A way of letting go is no expectations. Expectations is just worrying about the future. No fears, that's just worrying about the future. No judging yourself, that's just worrying about the past. How well you've done. How your meditation has been so far. This is why that the first part of the meditation is always present moment, present moment, present moment. And if that's all you do in this 9 days, just be in the moment. If you can just be in this moment for 9 days, you probably get far more than jhanas. Probably even get to enlightenment itself. If you could only stay in this moment and not expect or want something for the future. As soon as you think of the future, you try and control it and make it happen. If you can only abandon that future, even the next moment, and be perfectly present, just things become still. You're putting down the cup, you're letting go of the mind and allowing things just to rest, to become still, and the mind to go deep. So try and be in the present moment. That's why you don't have to worry about what time you've got to get up or what time you've got to go to bed. It's all about the future business. If you feel alive, ready to meditate, then just meditate. Don't think another 5 minutes or 10 minutes and I go to bed. Don't even think like that. Just now I feel okay. If a moment comes, I feel I need to go to bed, then go to bed. So live in the moment. Stop making plans. Don't even plan now what you're going to do in a few minutes. So you're waiting for the talk to finish so you can plan to do something else. Stop going off into the future. Be present. You'll find that there you get the first stage of letting go of controlling. Time is the tool of control. When you take away its tools, the control just can't work at you anymore. It's all its armor and its weapons are taken away. It's disabled. If you take away time, what can you do? Very, very little. So throw away the weapon of mass destruction called time. No past, no future. Don't know how many retreats you've been on before. Who gives a damn? Don't know how many more days there are left. Who cares? Sometimes you ask me what time it is. I say it's now minutes past now, on the nowth day of the nowth month, 2000 and now. So isn't that wonderful? So who cares what time it is? And that way you can enjoy the moment and you get rid of this attachment to the clock. Sit for an hour, 5 minutes. What's the difference between an hour and 5 minutes anyway? Just some conception we make in our minds. And that way you can just be in this moment as much as you can for the next, who knows. When you can do that, you are so free of what runs most people in this world. You don't have to control anything. You're just in this moment enjoying whatever's happening now and not worrying about the next moment. For those of you who know the law of karma, where is good karma made? Not in the next moment, not tomorrow or the next day. There's only one place you can make good karma, which is now. So make good karma in this very moment. So if you really want to become enlightened and get into deep meditation, good karma now. And what is good karma? Compassion, peace, letting go, no craving, forgiveness. Allow this moment to be. Make peace with this moment. Make due dana. You know, the greatest act of giving is giving your whole mind to this moment as it is, expecting nothing back in return. So look at your mind as if the thing you're actually going to give to this moment. Give the whole lot, my whole mind. I don't ask anything back from me. No craving, no demands, no wanting, no asking, no complaints. Just give this moment, your whole mind, to this moment, every moment. That's the great giving. It's much better than giving sort of to a Buddha, because you're giving to Dhamma, this moment right now. If you can do that right now, whatever you feel, whatever's happening, whatever sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, or mental object. Just allow it to be. Give your whole mind to this moment, expecting nothing back in return. You find you're in the present moment. When you want something from it, it's not giving, it's the opposite. Taking. What do you want from this retreat? What are you trying to get from this moment? What do you want from me or from the retreat center? If it's want, if it's the opposite of giving, it's always craving, controlling, and that is what disturbs the mind, stops you being aligned. You have this great sense of giving 100% totally to this moment. Then you will find the mind becomes so still, so peaceful, and so amazingly beautiful. It's just a matter of getting you to that point. I think the word these days is called the tipping point. You get a certain part of the meditation when you've given up so much, when you've let go so deeply, when you're so still, when you've abandoned so much of time and the commentary inside of yourself. You get so deep, and then you get this bliss coming up, this deep state of peace, happiness and joy, and you're having such a wonderful time that you don't want to control anything anymore. You're enjoying this moment so much, the next moment, who cares? I'm having good fun now. Just getting to that tipping point of the meditation, and then everything flows effortlessly, wonderfully, and I don't need to even say anything at all. It just flows from that point on. But that point is usually 2 or 3 days away. The time being, you just need to rest. Time being, you just need to leave things alone. First couple of days, don't expect anything at all. Your meditation will be a mess the first couple of days. Expect that. So that way, you don't have to worry about, well, it's not going well, well, I feel tired, well, nothing is working. Because they're not supposed to work. So it's part of the course. Well done. And that way, you find that you allow this body to rest. After 2 or 3 days, it'll start to pick up. That's the nature of it. So leave it alone and see what happens. Be in the moment. Enjoy this moment. You'll find just the very fact of being silent, not talking, of being free, being able to sleep when you need to sleep. Don't have to get up in the morning at this time, having these beautiful breakfasts and lunches, being around very kind people. The energy will start to build up. You get more and more peaceful and more still. You really enjoy this meditation. You'll find out why people come to meditation retreats, why retreats such as this get booked out almost as soon as the registration is open. It's peace and bliss and going deep into the mind. And it's from there you find out what the Dharma of the Buddha truly is. Remember the story of the Buddha. For 6 years he was striving and struggling and got nowhere. Whenever he got frustrated, he pushed even further. Whenever he got frustrated again, he'd really give it everything he got. And that's why he would never get enlightened. Don't be like the Buddha before his enlightenment, 6 years of struggle. But then he learned about letting go, sitting under a tree with a grass mat, having a good meal, washing, resting, and then meditating, with a body at rest, in the middle way, at ease. Everything could become still and get into the deep, deep, deep meditations of jhana. And seeing those deep meditations, he had the key to enlightenment, had the data, the raw experience, which showed him what suffering was really like and what the end of suffering is, what the escape is, what the sense of self is, and this doer, always controlling, making things happen, craving, wanting, and actually ending that craving, having moments, seconds, hours, when there wasn't one moment of craving in the mind. The mind never went out to search for anything. It was completely at peace for hours. Imagine what that must be like. To understand, not by theory, but experience, what it's like when all craving subsides. You are still and at peace, deeply, profoundly at peace. This is the stuff which gives you the ingredients of enlightenment. So hopefully, during this retreat, many of you will be brainwashed enough by me. You're silent, so I'm giving you all the conditioning and brainwashing. Enough that you will stop. You'll stop all this controlling business. You'll find the present moment. You'll relax there. You'll find the inner silence. You won't disturb it. You just watch the breath and it won't go away. You'll find you're going deep into the breath. It disappears, revealing the bliss, the nimitta. And it just stays. You find it just happens when you don't control it. You don't get excited, you don't get afraid. Leave it alone. You're following an old, ancient path. It's nothing to do with you. As the Vasudhi Magga says, the path is, but no traveller on it is seen. The path of Dhamma only really exists when you disappear. When you, the traveller, the person on the journey, the path is, but no traveller on it is seen. If there's a traveller there, the path disappears. So don't be a traveller on this retreat. Disappear. And the more you disappear, the more you fade away, the doer, the me, I'm in charge of this, it's my meditation, it's my retreat, it's my cushion, it's my this. Get rid of all of that. The more you disappear, the more the path appears. The path is, but no traveller on it is seen. And Nibbana is, but not the person that enters. Beautiful saying. So the more you disappear, the more the path appears. And when you disappear completely, then Nibbana is right there. So see if you can completely disappear. Vanish, gone, no more. Isn't that wonderful? Are you sick of yourself yet? Don't know how long you've known yourself. I've known myself for 54 years. I'm sick up to here with me. So it's wonderful to say, okay, off you go. Out you go, Brom. And to completely disappear, nothing is left. No body, no mind. Gone. So that's what you're going to do. So, have a nice time during this retreat. You can sit on a chair, sit outside, you know, sleep whenever you want. But don't talk, no mobile phones. And just, quite naturally, you'll find you just be able to meditate. And it will just build up by itself. Morning talks, 8 o'clock. There'll be some interviews later on. You don't have to come to the interviews. I'll put your names down there. You can always put a cross on, you don't want to come today. It's a waste of time just coming if you've got nothing to say. And if you have got something to say, just keep it brief, because we're not trying to make it nice and complicated. We're not going to sort of solve all the problems with your family or your business or whatever. Just keep in meditation. What's happening? It's very easy. I'm very skilled at this. I've been in this business a long time. You say what's happening and I can really help you. And especially when you get to those deep states of meditation, you get to nimittas or jhanas, so that's really nice to come and say what's happening, because that makes me very happy. That's the best joy I get from these meditation retreats, when someone comes along and says, oh, I've done it, oh. I love it when that happens. It always happens to a couple of people at least. But I want to increase the success rate. So not just a couple of people, let's have lots of people. Just getting so blissed out. You've never had such a wonderful experience in your life, ever. Imagine that. Just blissed out. I keep on saying, a bliss better than sexual orgasm, which lasts for hours, not minutes, just blows you away. Wow. That's what's on offer here. If you follow the instructions. If you are stubborn, willful, egotistical, and you do it your own way, Don't do it your own way. Don't do it Ajahn Brahm's way. Do it no way. Just give up. Don't do it at all. Get out of the way. And you find it happens. This is what happens. You put that, that's absolutely still. It hasn't moved at all for hours. Not hours, maybe minutes. I don't know. Lost track of time. Who cares? I can leave that down there all night and it won't move. As long as no one interferes. That's what your mind will be like. You put it down, you let it go, and it's still for hours and hours and hours. There's always somebody who gets into these 4, 5, 6 hour meditations on these retreats. They just sit here. They let go, and they're still, just like that cup of water, glass of water, or that bottle of water. It's just so easy once you get out of the way. So, the last words is please get lost. Nick off, get out of here. And I don't mean that in the normal way. Is that you, this ego, this self, this me, just disappear. And then the meditation gets really easy. There's supposed to be 8 precepts, but you all know what those 8 precepts are. Just basically no eating in the evening, just no messing around, just be still. Don't need to give them to you, to explain them to you. If you don't know them now, you never will know them. So, you know, cut away all the sort of the ceremony and just go and do it. Are there any questions about the retreat? Please ask a question. If there's anything which is uncertain, please ask. Because otherwise that you get confused afterwards. Is it quite clear what you're supposed to not be doing? Yeah. Great. So you can actually. No. Do you want to give it to me and I can look after it for you? You can actually tell them. Ajahn Brahm took it away from me, so I had no choice. And that way, that sort of, you know, it will be able to. Because what are they worried about? You're absolutely safe. You're the safest you could possibly be. And as for your family, it's about time they learn to detach from their mum and their wife. Let them go. Who cares? You've gone off into a monastery. So you're left the world. So you have to leave me. If there's anything really, 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 really important, like, you know, your husband's going through this life and death operation, then yes, you can give them a call. But if it's just ordinary stuff, my goodness, what do you need to keep contacting people for? There's only nothing really happening. It's just the ordinary stuff. So can you do that, Padma? Okay. Does anyone else want to give me their mobile phones? I'll put them all in. I hope they don't go off when I'm asleep. You have to tell me how to turn them off. And I give them back to you afterwards. It's like being at school, isn't it? Like being a school teacher, confiscating all the mobile phones and all that stuff. Any other questions anyone's got there? Comments? Okay, so you can do whatever you want now. There'll be. We do some chanting in the morning, don't we? About 6 o'clock or 5 o'clock, or what time is it? 6 o'clock, okay. Those who want to come for some chanting, you can do. You don't have to. You can do your own chanting if you're in your own room if you want to. But those who want to come, you can do some chanting if you want to. You don't have to. It's not necessary. But those who do, come in at 6 o'clock. And at 7 o'clock, do the breakfast. And don't worry about getting up in time for breakfast. I'm sure every one of you will get up for breakfast. And if any of you is meditating, and if you're meditating and you miss your breakfast because you get into a jhana, you come and tell me that you miss your breakfast because of jhana. The following morning, I'll personally take you breakfast in bed. I'll knock on your door and here you are. If you get into a jhana, you deserve it. It has to be the jhana, nothing less. So go for it. Don't worry about these worldly things. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. So enjoy the evening. And if you're tired because you come from a long way, just go back to your room straight away. Don't even worry about it. Just go and have a rest. If you feel like you want to meditate some more, have a cup of tea, go and walk in the garden, whatever you feel like doing. take it easy. No stress. No controller. Okay? Okay, off you go.